Before I turn this over to Rachel, here's what we're going to do today. Rachel is going to give her presentation on Jane Austen Places in the first part of the program, and she'll be here, and I'll add a few comments from over there. Then in the second part of the program, I'll be introducing Pride and Prejudice, and I'm going to do so by talking about money, property settlements, what an entailed estate is, and mysteries like that. But before we start with that, I just wanted to say one thing. If you were here last time for Ed Radcliffe's talk on carriages, you know that over and over again, he kept referring to Chapman, the Chapman edition of Austen's novels. And I just want to tell you what he was referring to, because those of you who might be interested, this is the edition to have. He's talking about a six-volume edition called the Oxford Illustrated Jane Austen, which was edited by R.W. Chapman. Originally in 1926, it's been reissued over and over again and revised. This is the edition that's always referred to if you read critical studies, biographies, or whatever. And one of the great virtues of this edition is there's one volume which is devoted, it's called Minor Works, which is devoted to all of the things that were not published, that Austen wrote, that were not published in her lifetime, that exist just in manuscript. Excuse me. That includes three unfinished novels and a bunch of other stuff. So, and also the edition includes appendices in each volume. There is an appendix, for instance, on carriages and travel, another one on estate improvements, and so forth. And let me just, if any of you are interested in getting this, let me just give you the ISBN number for this. You can find it easily that way, or just go in Oxford Illustrated Jane Austen. It's available all various places on the web, but the ISBN number is 019-254-7070, and though the list price, if you bought it from Oxford, is $175, I mean, I noticed, I was just doing a little searching this morning, and you can easily find it for well under $100. And also, the volumes are sold individually, and if you did it that way, you could get it for even cheaper. And I want to particularly point out that Mansfield Park, which we'll be doing in a couple of months, that as an appendix, there's the play Lover's Vows in the back, which is the play that the young people perform or attempt to perform in Mansfield Park, and scenes from which we'll be having performed at the end of September. So the complete text of that play is as an appendix in the back of Mansfield Park. So at any rate, Austen scholars are constantly referring to Chapman, and I just wanted to make sure you, I may do it from time to time myself, make sure you understood what they mean when they say Chapman. Yeah, so if I was just looking on Amazon, and they have gobs and gobs of used copies. So, all right, without further ado then, I'm going to turn this over to Rachel Dodge, whom you all know from last month when she gave that presentation on manners, and she will be doing a presentation on Jane Austen's Places. Rachel? Oh, there you are.
Good afternoon. Glad you're all here. Well, it's my pleasure to take you on a virtual tour of Austen's England. So prepare yourself for many beautiful sights and maybe wishing that you were spending the summer there rather than here in California. A lot of the photos I have for you today are actually I took them on a tour I took with Jasna. Went on a life and learning of Jane Austen's life and learning tour in 2007. So a lot of these are mine. And then here and there I found different sketches and things from books and things like that that would add to your understanding of the time and what it looked like when she was alive. So some of the things that maybe have been changed, I have sketches and things like that from various books. So I've some of the things you're going to see today, like I said, are very beautiful. Austen was surrounded by countryside and lovely homes. When you think of the most ideal English village you could imagine, that's pretty much what she saw. When you think of, you know, beautiful green farmland and quaint, you know, stone fences and hedgerows and all these sorts of things, roads with trees that just come up over it and create a beautiful green tunnel that goes on for miles, that's the type of situation she saw on a daily basis. And from her letters, we know that she enjoyed, quote, a little green valley, a beautiful walk. She remarked on the beauty of Kent and Surrey. And she was a great walker, as we've mentioned. Many of you probably know she enjoyed the outdoors wherever she was. And we also know that other than most of the time that she spent in her life, and we'll go through all this, in Hampshire, which is kind of in the southern part, she also enjoyed the beautiful rocky crags and rolling hills of northern England as far up as Derbyshire, which we'll also look at today, just as she traveled. And a few years in Bath, in the beautiful golden stone world of Bath. And she also did spend some time in the seaside, and we'll go through those, and enjoyed the beauty of Kent with its more stately estates and countryside there. And so as we go through this, you'll see that she's writing about what she saw. A lot of the places that she talks about are places that she went and enjoyed. So today we start our tour in Hampshire in the small village of Steventon. So this was where she was born. And she lived there for about half of her life. The Austen family was there. Her father was the rector of the parish there, the parish church. And while she was living there and kind of visiting various areas near there, is when she was drafting Sense and Sensibility, the first versions of each of these, Pride and Prejudice, and Northanger Abbey. And many of you might know she went away just for a very short time to go away to school with her sister to the Abbey School in, actually it's pronounced Reading. We would look at it as Reading, but it's Reading, for a short time there. But overall, she spent most of her young years in Steventon. The original home is no longer standing, the one that she was born in and grew up in. It was actually destroyed by her brother when he decided it wasn't. Didn't quite live up to his expectations of where he wanted to live when he took over. So, but we do have some sketches that were done of the original rectory that I'm going to show you, and the Steventon Church, the St. Nicholas Church, where her father was the rector, is still there. And so let me take you through some of those sites. First of all, we have a map here just to give you an idea if you kind of are wondering, where is Hampshire? If you can see, on each map I'll show you throughout the talk, I have a star for where London is, just to give you a kind of, you know, a place to always know where you are. Kind of helps me to know things like that. So if you see London, and then Hampshire is below there, and Steventon, as you can see right there with the arrows, will give you a starting point. And this is a sketch, one of the only sketches we have, actually the only sketch we have of her from the front. And her sister drew this. It's an unfinished sketch, but she was, Cassandra was definitely noted as at least a good artist. And so we hope that this gives us at least some idea what she did look like. And this is on display at the National Portrait Gallery right now in London. It's actually only the size of about a little postcard. As I'm traipsing through the entire gallery trying to find it, I'm looking for something really big and beautiful, and then I find it in this little, in a big case, but a little tiny postcard size sketch, which makes sense, but not what I was looking for. So here's the original site for the home that she grew up in, and you can see there's off to the left a little bit. You might not be able to see it right with the darkness, I think I'm seeing it. It's hard to see across from here. It's kind of dim, but there's an old pump, so that's kind of a spot where it would have been. and one of the larger trees that's still standing that was near the home. And so this will take us now to the sketch. And we have two sketches. They were both done by Anna Austin, and this is the front of the house. And you'll forgive me if I don't talk at times. I just want you to enjoy looking, so I don't want to go too fast. But this is the front and the lane that goes across the front of the house that would lead up to the up to the church. And then this is the back. And this was done in 1814. All right, and then we go up to the church. This is Steventon Church, St. Nicholas Church, where her father was rector. The whole time I was there, it rained and rained and rained and rained. It was very beautiful. And this is kind of the side of it. Not very big. You know, it was a small chapel. We would think of it as like a chapel or something. And here's the interior of the church. You can see the pulpit on the left side and the nave. Another picture a little bit closer up. And much of this looked like that when she was there. So it's fun to see some of this. And then next we have the inn that was nearby. And this is where they went to get their mail. And it's a short walk down the lane. Short, but not that short. You know, Austin liked to walk. So they walked down the lane, though, from the house to this building, and this is where they picked up their mail. So all of her letters going to and from, that's where they got them. And then next we're going to look at a few homes that were close by that she was familiar with. Ash Rectory, the home of Anna Lefroy, one of her dear friends. Dean House, the home of the Harwoods. And Ibthorpe House, home of the Lloyds. And just to give you an idea where those are in relation to Steventon, you can see on the map that they're very close. Not within walking distance, but I read in one of her letters she did walk to Dean once, so she said it was a difficult walk. Okay, so this is a close-up of Ash Rectory, home of Anna Lefroy. She was a close neighbor and friend of Jane Austen, and in one of her letters she described her as a perfect model of gracefulness and goodness. It's a very nice thing to have said of yourself, right? Dean House is the home of Sir and Lady Harwood. Sorry, and this was a place that she went often for parties and dances, and she liked to dance. On one occasion, she wrote in her letter she was describing the group of people that were there, and there was about 50 people, and she said, quote, in her witty way that she always says, she said, "Broad face, diamond bandeau, white shoes, pink husband, and fat neck. I was as civil to them as their bad breath would allow me." But she enjoyed dancing. She enjoyed the parties here. But that was just one occasion where she made a little comment about the crowd. Okay, next is Ibthorpe House. And I got to have a tour of this home, and it's so beautiful. It is absolutely gorgeous. It has very much been kept in the original state, the Georgian architecture, even the interior. The owners of it now take great pride in keeping it in its original state and allowed us, the Jasna tour, to come through and showed us around the house and fed us lunch. It was really nice of them. But this is where Martha and Mary Lloyd lived, close friends of Austin. She spent a lot of time here. And again, the front of the house. And this is a writing desk near a window that it said that perhaps Jane Austen might have sat to, you know, write letters or work on any of her manuscripts while she visited. And this is the view she would have seen. Yeah. You think when you look out on that, maybe it might inspire you to write. Okay, so next we're going to go through to Bath, where she spent a couple of years, as many of you are familiar. And when her father retired, they moved to Bath, and they lived in several different homes. And of note, I want to point out number 4 Sydney Place, where they were for several years, and we have photos of that. And then number 7 Green Park Buildings, and that's actually where her father did die in 1805 at the age of 73. Austin only wrote, as many of you probably know, her unfinished novel, The Watsons, during her time in Bath. And here again is a map taking us over to Bath. Okay. So this is a sketch done in the early 1800s. It's from a hilltop overlooking Bath, and it kind of gives you an idea of what it looked like at the time. My angle is a little weird, but I think I can find, that's the abbey, which I'm going to show you. It's still there. Okay. Now this is the buildings where she lived, number 4 Sydney Place. And this is actually their front door. We got to have a tour of this as well, and I want to say we didn't see all the stories, but I think it's 3 stories. It's a, you know, kind of a narrow house that goes up rather than out. And this is a plaque that's there now. There's several of the places where Austen lived now have plaques and things like that that a lot of the Jane Austen societies of England or even here of North America have put together and donated. So then Southampton, they just spent a short time here. But this is when, you know, after her father had passed away, they left in 1806 and moved to Clifton for a short time. It's not really known where exactly they stayed. But then they went to Southampton and for a few years were there and lived in a house in Castle Square. And of note, it's close enough to Portsmouth that that's during the time when she would have visited there, and she enjoyed it a lot and said she envied the wives of the sailors. She really liked that life there on the sea, so to speak, and the wind and the waves. Oops, this is really jumpy. Okay, so now we're back to Hampshire, first where she was in Southampton. And a lot of Southampton has been either changed because during the Victorian period, a lot of things were remodeled or destroyed during World War II, so that aren't a lot of things there that look like they did at the time. I did find one picture in a book of what it might have looked like, or what it, you know, a sketch of what it looked like at the time. And now we move to Chawton. So Mrs. Austen and Cassandra and Jane moved to Chawton in 1806. Before that, some of the brothers had still been with them. At this time, the 3 of them moved. Their brother Edward invited them to stay there in his cottage, Chawton Cottage. And it was a very short walk from there to the great house and the church from their cottage. And that's where she wrote Mansfield Park, Emma, and Persuasion. Back in the heart of Hampshire. And you can see there, it's fairly close to Steventon still. So she's kind of back to her home ground, her roots, and just the landscape that she enjoyed and the places that she liked to be, and was obviously quite prolific as a writer there again. Okay, so we have Chawton Cottage today. When you think of a cottage, don't you think of something small? A 2-story home that was pretty large. Yeah. And there's another view of it from their front door. And some of the people you'll see are people that were on tour with me. So. And the gardens outside it. This was a place you just, if you ever get to go visit, it's a place you just want to go and sit for hours and, you know, read or have a picnic or something. And this is the vegetable garden. That's the bakehouse I'm going to show you from the other side in a few slides. Kind of gives you an idea. A little arch looking back at the house. And then this is the bakehouse. And this is the inside of it. And this actually, you know, is still there. So you could see where they baked bread and things like that. Okay. This is the dining room and the dining set that's still there. And thought to be at least, you know, of the time period. And the china as well. I'm going to show it up close in a minute. But over here is the tea cabinet. This is her piano that's there. Some people sit down and play. They let you do that if you know how to play. Not just anybody, but they'll let you sit down and play. And a writing desk, they think might have been the writing desk that was there. We don't know exactly, but at least something like what she would have written on. And a close-up of the tea service. And the tea was kept under lock and key at the time. It was kind of a luxury item, and so kept under strict lock and key, so the servants don't, pilfer or something like that. And here's the room, Jane's room. She shared it with her sister, and so we can imagine maybe she did some of her writing here as well, or at least her dreaming. Okay. Now this is just the village today, just to give you an idea of what it looks like. This is right across the street, so busier than it was in her time. Now this is kind of the walk going from the cottage to the great house, and so this is one of the thatched homes that still survives that would have been there at the time. That's more what I picture when I think of a cottage. Maybe a little smaller still. And the stables going along this lane that you're walking from the Chawton Cottage to the great house. And, I mean, it's a short walk, but it's not just, pop over. You definitely have to, it's like a 5-10 minute walk or so. I was pregnant at the time, so I remember. And this is the drive down to the house. Go ahead.
Rachel just did. The great house was owned by Austin's brother, Edward. He was very wealthy because he was adopted by a wealthy childless couple as their heir. And he owned two estates, one in Kent, which we'll see later, and one in Chawton. He spent most of his time in Kent. That was his primary home in Chawton, much less often. But when he offered his mother and his two unmarried sisters a cottage on his estate, he gave them the choice of Kent or Hampshire, and they chose Hampshire, presumably because it was very close to Steventon, where they had lived for so long. And they moved there in 1809, and if you remember my very introductory talk, when I asked about that chronology, it was during this period from 1809 to 1870, when Austin died, that she revised Sense and Sensibility, Pride, and Prejudice probably extensively, and then just sat down one after another and wrote Mansfield Park, Emma, and Persuasion in this very short period of time. She was obviously comfortable here, and was gave her a chance to settle in and do her writing, as was impossible before her during that unsettled period in Bath and Southampton, and during that time when she also was doing a lot of traveling.
All right, and then take you closer to the great house and church. This is not one of my photographs, I wish. As you can see, it's not a dark day that day. But this gives you an idea of the proximity of the church and house, and I'll show you a few more. And this just gives you an idea of when she's talking about, a parish church, just how close they were. But it's a really beautiful drive as you come down into this great house. Another view of the church, another St. Nicholas church, if you're wondering. We got to attend Evensong when we were here as part of the tour, and it's the evening service and hymns and things like that, and it was very beautiful. In the evening time, the bells ring and everyone comes, and we were there actually during a Jane Austen Society of England, their annual meeting, and so a lot of people came. It was really neat. And this is the cemetery near the church, and this is where Mrs. Austin and Cassandra are both buried, and there are their headstones. It's a really pretty little garden area behind the church. And this is the great house in the front. And I hope it's not too dark. I hope you can see that, the great house from the back. The gardens. And now we're going to talk more about Kent and her brother's estate there, Edward's estate in Godmersham. And
Rachel hasn't told you, but you might have noticed that you haven't seen any blue sky or sunshine. This is because Rachel had the good fortune of attending this tour in what I think was the wettest summer in England since the days of Henry VII.
Literally. Yeah, I mean, there was flooding and all sorts of things the whole time we were on the trip, so we were all watching the news and wondering, are we going to be able to get to the next place? And I mean, we were supposed to go one day to Oxford, and we couldn't because literally all the roads were flooded, and it was crazy. So we got to do other things that day, but it was very overcast, and luckily a lot of places, once we would get there, it was for a few moments it would stop and we could see everything. So we're really fortunate. David said, Edward lived in Kent more than at Chawton, and spent a lot of his time there. And it's thought that perhaps one of the inspirations for Mr. Darcy's country estate, Pemberley, could be Godmersham, or at least that type of a house might have inspired her. And we'll also look at Gunston Park, which to us we think Goodness Stone or something, but it's Gunston. And that's the home of Sir Brooke and Lady Bridges, which were the parents of Edward's wife, Elizabeth, and somewhere that Jane Austen stayed several times. Give you an idea of what Kent looks like. Our map here, so we're just moving across here. And another engraving from the time, 1799. This is what it would have looked like. And you see the sweeping front drive kind of coming around. Most of you have seen different Pride and Prejudice movies, and they usually have a large house, something like that. So, and here's the front of it today. Not too shabby. A little close up. It's used for various things now. Small businesses are there and things. It's kind of strange. We couldn't really figure out what was going on there, but conference center and other things. So it's not a private home anymore. And the back of it. Just huge, huge grounds all around it. Just grass for miles, literally, trees. This is the avenue behind it. And we'll talk more later about more in detail about gardens and landscapes and that type of thing of the time. But when we get to talking about avenues, this is a good example of what an avenue looked like. And they have extensive walled gardens at Godmersham. And then that just gives you an idea of the landscape that she would have looked out the window and seen. I was lucky enough, it's always green in England, but I mean, it was absolutely lush while we were there because of all the rain. And here's the Godmersham Parish Church. Again, very close to the house, just a short little walk. And then this is Gunston Great House. Again, this is someplace that she had visited. And this just gives you another idea of the beautiful architecture of the time. It has been, the top story has been added, but the rest of it kind of gives you an idea again of the architecture, the Georgian period. And extensive walled gardens that make you want to run around and be a little kid again. If you've ever read Secret Garden, this is the place you want to go. It's really pretty. And again, the church, you know, each of these great houses had a parish church near it. So this is kind of through the walled gardens and you get to this church. It's really pretty. Now we're going to move to Winchester. And this is obvious, or some of you may already know, but this is where she went when she had gotten very sick and she kind of worsened and eventually passed away here. They lived in a small house on College Street. And she is buried at the cathedral that is right near there. This is gives you an idea. Again, we're coming back to Hampshire. Here's Steventon, here's Chawton, and then Winchester is where she finally was the last year of her life. And this is the home that she lived in at the time. It has another really neat little plaque that one of the Austin Societies has donated. And then this is an engraving of Winchester Cathedral in 1807. Gives you an idea of what it looked like at the time. And then this is the cathedral today. The inside, lots of stained glass. And then this is where Jane's grave is, actually inside the cathedral. And we got to hear Helen Lefroy came. She's kind of a great, great, great niece of the Lefroys. But an Austin dignitary, that's kind of how we think of these people who are in some way related. And she's very interested in Austin and the history. And so she came and we put flowers on the grave and things like that. So it's a nice little service. And then this is the plaque. And you can probably find it online or something if you just want to read it ever or in books. But it's a really nice engraving that's there. It's rather large in right where her grave is. Okay. So now we're going to talk about her novels and the different areas that she talked about in her books and that were maybe inspirations for certain places. Bath, obviously a huge inspiration for parts of Northanger Abbey and Persuasion. Then the places of interest we'll be looking at, the Pump Room. We hear a lot about that in Northanger Abbey. And the upper rooms, now called the Assembly Rooms. And I enjoyed visiting Bath mainly because that was the one thing in Northanger Abbey and Persuasion that was kind of beyond me. I kept thinking, what do they mean, take the water and this sort of thing? And so it was neat to kind of put it all into perspective and see the pump and see where people go to drink this water and walk and do all this. So we'll take you through a tour of that. So again, we hear Steventon, Chawton, and then Cross here is where Bath is, in Somerset. So this is the outside of the pump room. And then hopefully you can see that. I don't know how where I am it looks dark, but hopefully you're able to see it. This is the interior. It's now a restaurant. You can eat there. It's really pretty. And the actual pump.
When you pump water to drink, which is supposed to be good for you, it tastes terrible.
And the Bath Abbey is really close there to the pump room. And then these are the assembly rooms, the upper rooms. Lower rooms have since been destroyed, but these are the upper rooms that are mentioned in the novels. And this gives you an idea of the ballroom there at Bath in the novels, that when you ever hear of them going to a ball at the upper rooms.
Can I just interrupt?
There's another view of the ballroom, where the orchestra would be, up there at the top. You can see it's really pretty inside the architecture. And then this is the octagonal card room. So when we in the novels, when they would play cards, that's where that was. It's a really, really large room. So, you know, accommodated a lot of people came to these public balls. And so they would all go in to play, cards. And then here is the tea room, which is also mentioned in Northanger Abbey, trying to find a place to have tea and all that. Okay, and this is just of interest. There's a Jane Austen Center there now. It's a costume museum, and it tends to talk a bit more about or focus more on the movies and the films rather than the novels. But it's really interesting as far as just the Regency garb and finding out about what they wore and things like that. And it has a lot of different articles, you know, tables and chairs, things like that to kind of get an idea of what what she would have seen. And it's just kind of funny. This is not a real person. It's a statue. I don't know if you can tell. This man works there and walks around. He's supposed to be Mr. Darcy. Let me tell you, he's no Colin Firth. And this woman was actually on our tour and happened to be, or not happened to, she chose to wear her Regency dress that day in Bath, and so she got to have pictures of him. And he was very taken with her. But then also, it was really neat. A few of us, I don't even remember how it happened. It was one of those things. But a few of us got to go up with the woman who oversees some of the costumes there and able to see their costume closet. And they use it for various events and things like that. So it's really neat to get to see, I mean, just a huge, huge room full of different costumes for men and for women. Kind of see the petticoats, you know, all the different things, or the undergarments and things like that that they wore. So it's really neat. It's a neat place to visit if you ever get to go. And then just give you an idea of the streets of Bath. Most of it looks the way it did. The stone that it's made, that, you know, they built with, has just lasts and lasts. And so that, it's really neat that Bath really looks like Georgian England. And most of, I mean, it was even, Bath was built during that period. And so it looks a lot the same now as it did then. Milsom Street that I had before here, General Tilney is supposed to live there, so give you an idea. And then this is the Royal Crescent, which most of you are probably familiar with, but it's just beautiful. I mean, it just goes on and on. And when you look at, you read books or you read descriptions about Bath and this golden stone that they worked with there, I mean, it really is true. The whole city just is very light and pretty. And the way it was, everything is done in these curves. So it's really, really beautiful. It gives you another idea of it. This is one of the only sunny days we had, I think. And some more architecture. This is a bridge there. And then I have just a few, it gives you an idea of what it looks like today as far as just the gardens and just public places where you can go and walk. And I mean, it's really neat because in some ways it doesn't look exactly like it did then, but it gives you an idea of what you could have done at the time. You know, go on walks, go out, enjoy the outdoors there. It's very pretty. And more idea of just the kind of the architecture. And some of the buildings back here. Okay. Now we're going to go to Box Hill from Emma. And an important group outing, as you all know, from Emma. And they go to Box Hill and kind of the wooded area, and it overlooks some villages. So it's interesting to see what her inspiration was. Now, this is in Surrey. So, again, if we've started here at Stevenson and Shotton, this is Box Hill up here.
Could I just interrupt for a second? I'm just curious, how many of you have not read Emma? Okay, just a few of you. Well, and when you do read the novel, you will see that in many ways what could be considered the climactic scene in the book takes place at Box Hill.
So here's the view from Box Hill. And the villages below have all been changed a lot. So they don't look the way they did at the time. But this gives you the idea of the view of what she would have seen. And this is really pretty. You'd have to drive up into the hills and come up here. And there's little wooded walks and things like that. So it's really pretty. And this is, you know, the inspiration at least for the what we would think of as, you know, an outdoor picnic. Though that was, they wouldn't have called it that. Okay, and another picture there. Again, it was a misty day, but I was able to get a few good pictures of it. Okay. Oops. And the woods nearby with lots of different trails to walk. In each destination, we had readings from the books, and that really added to it. So when we came here, we would hear readings from that portion of the book from Emma. Okay, and now we go to Lyme Regis. Famous scenes from Persuasion and the Cobb scenes there. How many of you have read Persuasion? We should probably ask that. Oh, most of you. Okay, that's good. Well, we'll see the famous scene, jumping from the steps in a second. So this is Lyme. So again, just to give you your bearings, Chawton, down here on the coast is Lyme. Okay, here's the Cobb. And it really curves around and, you know, obviously it's a sea break, but it gives you kind of an idea of how big it was. I don't know if when I reading the novel, if I ever knew exactly how big it would be, but it's quite large. It was a really stormy day, probably the coldest day we were there, which kind of made for a fun environment, very adventurous. We're all having to hold on to each other not to slip off. And then here are the granny's teeth steps talked about in the novel. So when she's walking down the steps and going to jump off into, I don't know, I don't ever want to give things away, but just in case you haven't read it, I'll let you. But anyway, silly girl.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. For those of you who haven't read the this is probably the most famous scene in all of Austin's novels, so we don't want to spoil it. Those of you who haven't read it, but you'll see the importance of the setting when you get to the book.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the scenes that's probably the, I mean, it's kind of a silly girl trying to get attention, so we can look back at a time we might have done something like that. There's me on the steps. It was, like I said, very cold, and I was one of the only people actually prepared for weather there, so popped out my umbrella and had my gloves and my scarves, and everybody else is freezing. And that's Lyme today. Obviously, it looks different, but just give you an idea that it's a really pretty little port town. And this back here just gives you an idea of the Cobb as it goes all the way around. So it's a huge curve of it. All right, and now we go to Portsmouth. Sights of scenes from Mansfield Park. There's a naval shipyard there. Jane's brother, Francis, and Charles were both in the Navy. And there also is where they have the HMS Victory, and where Lord Nelson, Britain's greatest naval hero, led the fleet to that important victory. And we got to take a tour of that boat as well, of that ship as well. So there's Portsmouth. We have Chawton, and then here's Portsmouth. Still in Hampshire. There's the HMS Victory for anyone who's interested. It's really neat to tour that and go into it, though you get really claustrophobic because the ceilings are so low. Okay, so there's some homes here along the way in Portsmouth that are thought to possibly be an inspiration for...
Let me just clear up again. Far more you probably have not yet read Mansfield Park, but Portsmouth is the town that Fanny, the heroine, grew up in before she was adopted by her more wealthy relatives. And there is a scene late in the novel when she returns home for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And a church there that was there at the time. Possible inspiration. We always say possible inspiration, partly things she saw, but again, you know, an author has license to dream and imagine and come up with all sorts of things. So, but this is what she would have seen. And here are the famous ramparts, to give you an idea. And it's, again, a really pretty place to visit. People just kind of hanging out there, almost like we would at the beach or something, but sitting out. And again, I had a nice day that day, so it wasn't raining on us. And the streets today. Okay, now we're going to look at some things just to do with Pride and Prejudice, our novel for this month. And just to give you an idea of some of the scenes from Pride and Prejudice that could have been inspired by the landscapes there and the countryside. And of note in this section is Chatsworth House and the... Whoops, did I skip my map? Yep. Okay, so now this is as far north as we, from her letters, that we know that she traveled. So that gives you an idea. Here's Chawton. And this is Matlock Bridge in Derbyshire.
All of these locations and arrangements. Rachel is going to show you are mentioned in the novel when Elizabeth and the gardeners go on their tour. These are places that are mentioned as they're having visited.
And so in Pride and Prejudice, before going on this tour, the description we're given is it says they were obliged to give up the lake, so the Lake District, and substitute a more contracted tour. According to the present plan, they were to go no farther northwards than Derbyshire. In that country, there was enough to be seen to occupy the chief of 3 weeks. And to Mrs. Gardiner, it had been a particularly strong attraction. The town where she had formerly passed some years of her life and where they were now to spend a few days were probably as great an object of curiosity as the celebrated beauties of Matlock, Chatsworth, Dovedale, or the Peaks. So we'll go through. This is Matlock Bridge, a sketch of it at the, in the early 1800s, and then this is what it looks like today. You can still go and stay there. There's a lot of really beautiful places to stay. If you go online, you can get a package and go stay and go on these walking tours. So now you're all going to want to go to England. And Dovedale. And these stepping stones is kind of the place where this one, you can go on this kind of circuit walk, and that's where it starts today. I don't know if it started there then, but that's today where you take this kind of walk around Derbyshire. And the Peak District, when she talks about the peaks. It's really beautiful. Another view. I did not travel here. I should make note of that. I had to find a lot of these pictures. Oops. A castle that was there, built in the 1600s, I believe. So it would have been there when Jane Austen was visiting and traveling there. Now, Elizabeth Bennet, when she heard of Derbyshire, she thought something. Let me read that to you. With the mention of Derbyshire, there were many ideas connected. It was impossible for her to see the word without thinking of Pemberley and its owner. But surely, she said, I may enter his county without impunity and rob it of a few petrified spars without his perceiving me. And this is Chatsworth House, a painting of it at the time. And then this is, did you want to go ahead?
This is another house that critics and biographers suggest might have been an inspiration for Pemberley. There are quite a few of these houses around England.
Okay, and then some more familiar homes that she had visited and would be familiar with. Stoneleigh Abbey in Warwickshire, and then Adelstrop Rectory, the Rectory of Hamstall Ridwar, Lamberhurst, Chevening House, and Pines. And just to give you an idea, these are kind of all over the place, but just to give you an idea of Exeter and Kent, Adelstrop, and up here in Warwickshire and Staffordshire. Now, these give you an idea of just some of the places she saw or visited and that could, again, give inspiration for the sizes of homes and give you an idea. Stoneleigh Abbey, though, was actually the country seat of Jane Austen's relatives for 400 years, the Leys, her mother's relatives. In August of 1806, Jane with her mother and sister traveled there to the Abbey, and Mrs. Austen wrote in a letter this description. She said, I had expected to find everything about this place very fine and all that, but I had no idea of its being so beautiful. I had pictured to myself long avenues, dark rookeries, and dismal yew trees, but there are no such dismal things. The Avon runs near the house amidst green meadows bounded by large and beautiful woods full of delightful walks. And that's what it looks like today. Okay, so this gives you an idea of rectories at the time. And these are some photos from a really interesting book, if you ever want to check it out, of the library, The World of Jane Austen by Nigel Nicholson. And it takes you kind of on a tour of all the homes and things. But this is from that book. It's really interesting reading if anybody's ever interested in knowing more about the architecture of the Georgian period. And here again, another rectory. So in any of the novels, when you hear of a rectory, this gives you an idea of the size of it. Again, you know, it's not this little tiny cottage or something that you might envision.
Jane Austen's father, of course, and two of her brothers were clergymen. So this gives you, of course, many of the characters in the novels are. This gives you an idea of the kinds of places they might get to live.
Okay, and then here's another example of the proximity of a great house over here to the parish church. So it gives you another idea when you hear about her talking about that in her novels, just gives you the idea of how close they were. And then this is thought to be a possible inspiration for a Rosings type house. So again, I know David prefers never to say that any one house was what she was picturing when she was writing, because we like to think that she was writing her own ideas and coming up with imaginative fiction, but a house like this might have been a similar size or inspiration. And this for Barton Park. And this is just Chawton in the springtime. I didn't get to see it with all these beautiful flowers, but these are the sites and that were familiar to Austen, and obviously the beauty of the English countryside was the backdrop of all of her writing. And as you read her books, hopefully now you can picture what she saw, the familiar places and sites and the beautiful scenery that were near to her and dear to her, and inspired her to write about the things that she knew best. She always wrote about places she had been or experienced. And with this backdrop, she wrote about her most favorite arrangement, bringing the right group of people into exactly the right place, which for her was, quote, 3 or 4 families in a country village, the very thing to work on. Thank you. So today it's I'm not going to be able to remember the exact name of it, but it's a library now. It wasn't open when we went there, but you can, if you want to go and study or do anything like that, you can study there.
Women writers.
Yeah, good. Thank you. Yeah. Ooh, we like that. So I don't know if you could hear that, but it's an American woman that restored it and has put together this organization that has a library there now. Whist? Is that one of them? Lotto?
And the women went in to play what was called Round the Games. And there's a lot of mention that the novel where any number of people were playing basically games of chance. But then Whist, which is somewhat similar to contact, which not exactly, but when you read Mansfield Park, there's a lot of English about their fact that two of the characters can't get along with their heads of the library when they're playing them. But there were a bunch of different games. It depended on whether you were playing a game where you just had 4 people or you wanted a whole lot of people to join in, at which you could play one of these round games where everybody could play.
Yeah, it's the question was the tour that I went on related to, you know, to a university or something like that. It was the JASNA, so Jane Austen Society of North America. They have been doing tours almost every summer, so if you ever can go, I would say do it. But I know it's always really hard to get on the trip, so as soon as you hear about the tour, send in your paperwork. I was at a reading group here in Sacramento at one of the other library branches, and I heard, they said, the trip is open, sign up today. So I went home and signed up and got the last spot on the trip when I went. I was so excited. But yeah, so it was JASNA, and we have a really neat tour guide that usually does her name's Elizabeth Proudman, and she is a really knowledgeable Austin person, and so she gives a great tour. I mean, everywhere we went on the bus, she's giving us history of the family, of the places, the education. We saw several different schools and things like that, so if you ever have the opportunity, it's really neat. You know, it's funny, it looks really large from the outside, but now, yeah, I think, now that I remember, there weren't that many bedrooms, actually. And so that's my understanding of probably why. I know that they shared a room, though, everywhere they went, so they maybe just liked to be, yeah, shared a bed, so I think maybe they liked being friendly. But in that house, I remember there was only a few bedrooms upstairs. Warmth and fewer fires to be lit. Thank you. Well, married men. I don't know if that makes anyone. Yeah, men with their wives. I don't think we had any single men on the trip. Single women, of course, but yeah. Women and their daughters, some, and things like that. But yeah, several men that came, though, were very, very interested in Austin. Some of them were the Austin person in their family, and they brought their wives, so, yeah.
Can I ask a question about the church you showed us?
Where are you? Oh, okay, great.
About the church you showed us in Stevenson?
Uh-huh.
When was that built, do you know?
Ooh, I don't know that. Do you have any idea?
The Stevenson Church? No, I don't, but I think it was probably maybe about 16th, 17th centuries. Hey, that would be my guess.
It's at least 16th century.
Okay.
And on the inside, you can still see the medieval drawings and paintings that were there. So it's very, very, very old.
But it's been redone several times.
Anybody else? Oh, yes, that it was built in at least the 16th century.
Yeah.
And you can see, I don't know if one of my pictures might have shown it, but you can see the medieval paintings up above, and it's been restored, though, several times. I think my favorite spot was actually Gunston House, even though that she didn't spend a lot of time there. But because it was just so beautiful, it was the one place that I kind of wish everyone else would go away, and then I could just walk around and take a nap and read books and things like that. So that was probably the most inspirational and beautiful house I visited.
We should probably break at this point.